Welcome back, bullshitters. It's been a while. It's been a busy old summer. There's been lots of regenerative agriculture shows going on. Down to Earth, Nicole Masters has been doing her thing. Groundswell, Green Farm Collective, quite a few of them. Between Andrew and I, we've been to most of them. There are definitely some trends there. There's definitely a lot of bullshit there. And hopefully we can sum all that up for you. And hopefully save you the trouble of having to go to these things. So, anyway, stick around. You'll get our thoughts.
Yay!
Hello.
Greetings. Crikey, well, we better tell people what's happening. So this is a first time in new technology. We're hoping this works. We're doing it over the phone. We've seen so much of each other lately that we're thoroughly sick of each other, all these bloody shows. So we'll try it from a distance.
Yeah. Are we far enough apart, do we think?
Well, you're Bristol way, and I'm about as close to Cornwall as you can get without actually being Cornwall.
You fell short then, basically.
You what, sorry?
You fell short.
Let's not go there. Let's not stoke this one up. But you feeling recovered from groundswell?
Definitely not. Not even a little bit.
It was pretty full on, wasn't it?
It was exhausting. Completely, utterly exhausting.
It was really, really exhausting. So
in a good way, not in a bad way.
No, that's just, right.
Yeah, good way.
Cool. So what we're going to talk about today to our bullshit audience is just sort of like going through what we've been, you know, what shows we've been to, what we got out of them, what the trends in bullshit are, that sort of thing, and perhaps even rank, you know, how well the shows did. So what shows have you been to?
Well, I've done Down to Earth South.
Yeah.
And then I did Groundswell.
Yeah. And
between those, I had the privilege of spending a little bit of time with Nicole Masters and 100 other people at Althorp Estate.
Oh, right. I think you'll find it's pronounced Althorp, but, you know, that's just local knowledge. I wouldn't expect you, Cornish, to understand that. But it's... Well,
yeah, okay. Althorp.
Yeah.
Same We're thing.
We're getting there.
Yeah.
So how did... let's go to the Nicole Masters then, because that was a vastly expensive do for spending 2 days with someone sort of like basically ruminating about their thoughts and, you know, sort of like handing over knowledge and so forth. How did that go?
Well, it was the second of two sort of courses, training sessions, days with, I don't know what you want to call it. There was 2 days at the end of last year, sort of, I think it was October, November time last year, and I couldn't make it, so I didn't get to attend that one, which was a little bit more of an introduction and sort of covering the basics. And then this one was a little bit more of an in-depth dive into Regen Ag.
Okay.
But it was sort of, you know, a general regenerative course with a really heavy focus on bricks, biology, and extracts. Compost, vermicast, extracts played a big part of it as well, and biology.
So you say bricks. Not everyone's going to know what bricks are. They're not those cubes or shapes of clay. This is big X, isn't it?
It's slightly different, yeah. So it's the energy within a plant, effectively. The amounts of sugars are within a plant. So the higher the bricks number, the more sugar, more energy within that plant.
Okay, and that's a good thing.
Supposedly, yes. Higher bricks is better for everything.
Okay, cool. And that was basically the underlying message of a course then?
Yeah, to be honest with you, the take home for me from day one was definitely bricks, and more bricks.
Okay.
That was both good and bad. I think it was interesting. You know, it was, she could demonstrate quite clearly how different things she was doing was affecting the BRICS readings of the crops and plants that she was working with. And as far as she was concerned, the higher the BRICS, the more root exudates that were going down into the soil, the healthier the plant was, better resistance to disease, better immune system of the plant, just generally everything was sort of working and functioning as it should. So plants or soils that are not complete or not functioning as they should will have a lower BRICS reading than a plant and a soil that is functioning well.
Surely BRICS, the sugars basically come from photosynthesis though, so isn't it just how well it's photosynthesizing?
But then the ability of the plant's ability to photosynthesize will also depend on the soil conditions and its availability of nutrients. So if it has a deficiency in a particular nutrient, it's not going to, that plant isn't going to be able to function as well. And one of those many functions of a plant is to photosynthesize. So it was joining the two together. You know, it's a little bit chicken and the egg, I suppose. But a plant that doesn't have the nutrients that it needs or is unable to get them from the soil is not going to photosynthesize as well as a plant that does have the nutrients that it needs.
Well, isn't it easier to look at the soil then and just assume if it's deficient, you're not going to photosynthesize as much? And then you can actually get an idea of what's actually missing rather than going, oh, yeah, your plants are shit.
So it would be, I suppose, in Nicole's defense, and I'm not speaking for her by any stretch of the imagination, I would imagine that the sort of thought process is you can take a soil analysis, and that's obviously a good thing to do, and you can provide the nutrients that you feel your soil is potentially lacking, or if you know you've got nutrients that are potentially locked up, for example, you could potentially try and release some of those nutrients with the application of biology, for example. But I guess taking that BRICS reading gives you an indication of how well that has worked. So if you've applied lime, for example, this year because you've got pH issues and you could be locking some of the nutrients up within your soils, you apply lime, you then reanalyze the BRICS, and that balance within the soils, those availability of those nutrients could lead to a higher BRICS reading, potentially.
Yeah, but isn't it a bit like, it's a bit like taking a blood test on a corpse and say, oh yeah, eating all that arsenic did kill you.
Well, yeah, of course it is, but it's I think I'd like to think, and I don't know if she said this or not, but I'd like to think that BRICS is being used as one of many tools available to farmers and growers to know what's going on.
Okay, fair enough. So like a suite of sort of analyses.
You know, we the same could be said for tissue sampling or even a sap analysis or even a soil analysis. You know, we've taken enough soil samples to know that you can take it in one field one year, you go back and take it in what you think is the same place, you know, a month later, it could give you a very different reading.
Isn't that just incompetence of the operator, though?
Well, we've taken soil samples. I think a lot of people would definitely mention incompetence as one of those variables.
Yeah, they probably would. Let's move on because I don't want to dwell on that too much.
But I think it was, she put a lot of focus on BRICS. And I think it's because it's something that you can do and measure and see really easily.
Yeah.
And I think there is some science to suggest that if you've got higher BRICS, your plant is going to be healthier.
Yeah.
And she mentioned about, you know, crops that are fed a lot of nitrates are going to have, you know, a BRICS reading of about 3 consistently, about 3. And when you then measure the BRICS of, you know, fruit and veg that we buy from the supermarkets also being really low of around 3. That's not great when, you know, you look to nature and you can see some really good healthy crops that are being grown with BRICS of closer to 20.
Right. So is there like a list of what the good BRICS is? Because if you just go to your crop and you just say, oh, I've got BRICS reading of 12.
Yeah.
Does that actually mean anything or? what do you need to take in context with?
Well, I, without having studied the science, I haven't done any homework for this at all, obviously, because we're discussing more generalist opinions.
But yeah.
My understanding is that there is some basis that a higher Brix almost always means a healthier plant. That could mean that it has a better disease resistance. It could mean that it's not radiating or giving off the signals of a sort of compromised plant, which is what these aphids that are flying over crops are looking for and sensing. So we know that's the case as well now. So
you're not talking about Callahan and his radio waves and all that sort of bollocks, are you?
I think Callahan would definitely wade in on this argument and say there's something in that.
Yeah.
But I mean, I think, you know, that there was a bit of research and some technology saying that the aphids that fly over these fields can pick up slightly compromised plants given their radiation or radio waves that they're giving off, the resonance of these plants that are giving off, and they will then target those areas, you know, so you don't see as many aphids in a healthy crop.
Yeah, fair enough. Fair enough.
So there's something in it.
Yeah.
But I don't know the science yet supports what we're possibly seeing, maybe.
Yeah, I don't want to dwell on the Brix factor. So that was her key thing. What about the people that were there? Was it sort of like the Nicole Masters arse-licking club? Or was there actually debate? Or was it all like Nicole and her disciples? Or
no, I think the way in which it was set up and the way in which it was run definitely encouraged debate. So if you wanted to say something, you know, Nicole could be talking and she could be explaining something. And if you had something to say, add, question, sort of confirm, whatever it was, if you wanted to say something, you could quite easily say it. And she wouldn't shut you down. She would give you the time of day to say what you wanted to say. And if a retort was needed or a response was needed, she would give it. But she would also allow others to contribute to that conversation as well.
Okay. So was it worth the money then?
Was it worth the money?
Say you were not so heavily involved in regen. You're a farmer, you're saying, oh, like, you know, this sounds like a good idea. I need to make my soils healthier. This regen sounds like it might be a thing. Would you, like, say to those sort of people, say, yeah, spend these however many hundreds of pounds and go and see Nicole Masters on a course and that will set you on the right track?
I would say that if you're in that situation, I would tell somebody not to spend the money on going to see Nicole. I would say spend some time watching YouTube videos and reading books to start with. Okay. And I think from my point of view, I would say that actually going there was, you know, we've obviously read her book. We like what she's doing. I think there's something in it. She talks, you know, she talks a lot of sense. You know, whether you agree with all of it or not is irrelevant. She does talk a lot of sense. She is a minor celebrity within the agricultural world. And just to spend some time with her was quite cool. And if I'm honest with you, although maybe I didn't learn as much as I was really possibly hoping for, it was definitely an inspiring couple of days in regards to, yes, I think I'm right in my regenerative ways. It's nice to know that others are sort of trying and doing similar sorts of things. There was a few people there that were really interesting to talk to. So from a networking and just generally motivating sort of angle, it was worth my time and money.
Okay. Still, I detect a note of doubt in your voice, but I'll pass over.
I've spent money better, if you will.
Oh, that time in Bangkok. Are you going to talk about that?
I've actually never been to Bangkok, but I'll put it on the list because obviously you've got a story or two.
It was well turned around.
it was good.
Yeah,
it was good, but it was expensive.
So what was the the disciples of masters? Were they actually farmers, or were they your typical people who've got two alpacas and they knit tofu while we're reading The Guardian and sort of like, you know, tapping along on their clogs? What were they that sort? Or
were... Well, there were no clogs. And as far as I was aware, there were no alpaca owners, but I might be wrong. So to give you a broad brush, there was a couple of guys there that I know that are farming 500 plus hectares.
Yeah.
But I was also sat next to a very nice lady at lunch who was a landscape gardener.
Okay.
There were flower farmers there. There was a dairy farmer there. So there was a real mix of people. There was growers, there were farmers, there were interested parties, there was consultants, there were advisors, there was a water company. One of the water companies helped sponsor a few free passes for a few people. So there was a mix.
These leaky pipes instead of fucking about going to these courses.
Yeah, that was possibly my one criticism. If I was allowed one criticism, would be that a water company, and it was a Midlands water company. I don't know my Midlands water companies that well. They sponsored, I think it was 13 tickets.
Wow.
And of the people that I spoke to of those 13 tickets, a few of them didn't have huge acreages.
Yeah.
And I would argue that from a water company's point of view, the sponsorship would have been better of large landowners who can have a greater impact on reducing water pollution.
Yeah, fair point.
And that's not really a criticism, but it kind of is at the same time.
Yeah. Nothing like being damned by faint praise. So how much was the course? Are you going to share how much it was?
It was 350-ish, maybe a bit more, something like that, for 2 days.
And what was in that? Food, accommodation, blowjob?
Food and drinks, water, snacks.
Yeah.
And then time. And we had, you know, Karen Spencer, who sort of organized it. She was great. She was really accommodating. She spoke a few times. She was genuinely interested. She said to everybody, you know, the house is yours. Use it. You know, walk around the garden, see things, do things. So just being in the house on the estate in itself was pretty cool.
So that is Spencer, as in sort of like, you know, the Princess of Hearts or whatever they call her, the people's princess.
Princess Diana.
That's it, yeah.
It's her family home.
Right, okay. And did you go and see the memorial?
I did go and see the memorial. So I had took 10 minutes to myself to go and have a wander around the lake and see the memorial. And it genuinely felt like somewhere of importance. It felt a little bit eerie. It just... maybe because I knew what was there as opposed to anything, and it was all in my mind, but it did feel a little bit eerie, the place.
Is it true there's a sort of like a wreath there in the shape of a steering wheel?
There is a monument to... I took a picture of it. Did I see a wreath with the shape of a steering wheel? No.
That's just my sixth. I'm so sorry. Oh, I'm so sorry to all you Rogers.
Well, then wreaths generally are round, which you could argue is like that of a steering wheel.
Yeah, I guess so. You're pulling me out of the shit here. I appreciate that, Andrew. Right, anyway, we've done, I think, Nicole Masters.
It was good. It was interesting. Would I go again? Yes, I probably would. Just because, again, the people you meet, the conversations you have, they were awesome.
Excellent. That's good. So... So that was not exactly a show, but there was quite a few people there, and it was quite a public event, and it was one of the sort of like the leading lights in Regen and Ag.
Yes.
So I guess the next big one, or the biggest probably, is Groundswell, which we got back from. Well, I got back from absurdly late last night, but it was good. There is a buzz definitely to Groundswell. You actually spoke a couple of times, didn't you?
I did. I had, I think they were running out of speakers, so they got desperate enough to me.
Yeah.
The honest answer, not the honest answer, is I don't feel qualified enough to talk about Groundswell because I didn't get to see what I wanted to see.
Because we were too busy on the stand.
Exactly that.
Yeah. Okay.
You know,
I mean, there was definitely some socialising afterwards, so you can pick up on the mood. So my sense was there was a lot of energy there.
Yeah.
The mood was very positive, very ebullient. There were a lot of people there that were farmers and asking really pertinent questions, but there were a lot of people that were, you know, sort of like they've got a quarter of an acre where they're producing jam from some weird berry from the Himalayas. So I did get a little bit of, I guess it's the people who go to the Oxford Real Conference, isn't it? There's quite a intersection with that sort of crowd.
You're right. I mean, but then that's not the fault of Groundswell. That's just the people that are interested and attend. They put it on as a bit of a festival vibe.
Yeah.
So it does have that festival feel. And, you know, I think it does lend itself to those more sort of, I'm going to say, hippie types.
Yeah.
And I mean that in the nicest possible way. In that
people. Bit like myself.
So, well, yeah, you wouldn't look out of place.
No.
What was that old festival they had in Woodstock? That's what I'm thinking of.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I think I wear clothes for that though, but that's. I'd say it's before my time, but unfortunately, I was actually alive at the time. So we'll pass swiftly on from that.
From my point of view, the vibe, the atmosphere, my general overall opinion was that was the best Groundswell that I've been to.
Yeah, and it's probably the biggest.
Oh, definitely. So the last episode we spoke about, and I said that I would take people to Groundswell pre-COVID.
Yeah.
Well, actually, I would have taken them to Groundswell this time.
Okay. What I did notice this time, got a few chances to take a wander around. I did notice, there were quite a few of the big players there, your big ag companies. Not necessarily in big tents a la cereals, but they had a presence.
Yeah.
But I think what worried me more was the presence of a lot of the carbon. There were a lot of tents there that were sort of like saying, you know, come talk to us, let us steal your carbon.
Yeah.
That made me feel a bit uncomfortable.
Yeah. This is a topic that we're not going to be able to ignore on the podcast for much longer.
No, I know. We need someone who actually knows what they're talking about, though, don't we?
I got dragged into, not physically dragged, but I was dragged into a talk at Down to Earth South, which we've not touched on. We've sort of scooted over a little bit.
This is a good time to go on with it.
Well, one of the breakout sessions was from, is it Agrina?
Agrina, yeah.
Yeah. And they were talking about their offerings of, you know, we can buy your carbon bits and pieces. But what really surprised me, like genuinely surprised, and it actually annoyed me at the time, and if I wasn't dragged away somewhere else, I would have asked the question at the end of it. They are now paying people to just reduce their carbon footprint.
Okay. So,
if you've got a carbon footprint, say, and I'm just picking a number out there, say your carbon footprint is 100 and you do something that they approve of, i.e. you use less nitrogen fertilizer this year.
Yeah.
Therefore, instead of having a carbon footprint of 100, your new carbon footprint is, say, 75.
Yeah.
They'll pay you for that year for the 25 difference.
Okay.
So and one question that I did hear that somebody asked was, well, I've been an organic no-till farmer for the last 25 years. what can I do and what benefit to me is all the work that I have done previously. You're rewarding people for having high carbon footprints that can just reduce it a little bit.
Yeah.
Where's the reward for me as somebody that's been farming, you know, in his opinion, you know, really good farming practices for the last 25 years? Where's his payment?
Yeah. No, that's a really valid point. It's
forget that point, because that's not really what annoys me. That's just unfortunate for the chap. How can you pay somebody for still having a carbon footprint but just reducing it?
Well, it's a bit of a lost leader to get them into this weird cult of selling carbon, isn't it? It's
And then another conversation, and I'm on a bit of a rant now because it really infuriates me.
Anyway, it fills time. It's brilliant.
But another one is planting trees. So you pay to plant trees and you can offset some carbon.
Yeah.
That tree is then sold and it's chopped down and sold as timber.
Yeah.
So that then they're selling carbon. Say it's been made into biochar.
Yeah.
The person that's making it into biochar can claim carbon credits because he's taken that timber and he's converted it into biochar, which has prevented it from being burnt or used elsewhere.
Yeah.
So that person making the biochar gets carbon credits.
Yeah.
And then the person that buys the biochar and puts it in the ground and increases its organic matter in the soil also gets paid carbon credits for increasing the organic matter in the carbon.
Yeah.
That same carbon has been, carbon credits has been claimed on that same tree three times by three different people.
Well, yeah, this is the whole thing about offsetting, isn't it? Offsetting is bollocks. I mean, I've been reading a bit about biodiversity offsetting at the moment, and that really makes me angry. Basically it boils down, you can say something like, oh, okay, you know, if you've got a farm, if you stop using insecticide, you're going to sort of like save X number of insects. Or if you want to spray them off, what we'll do is we'll stop strangling chimps in Africa. It's you know, the equivalence, it's just there's no regard for the actual ecology of either place. It's just like, yeah, go on. Yeah, spray all those bugs. Yeah, don't worry about it. We'll just strangle one less chimp for every three fields that you, you spray. It's ridiculous. And it's just, there's no equivalence and there's no responsibility and there's no actually accounting for it. And it's just bonkers. It's just with people in big business looking for excuses to carry on. They know they're fucking up the planet.
It's not even, I don't even think it's that anymore. I really don't even think it's that. I just think that people with lots of money have seen an opportunity to make more money.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Yeah. No, I suppose it's in a whole industry in itself, isn't it?
But it's a completely unregulated industry. And there's a lot of people making a boatload of money selling this carbon and trading carbon when there's zero regulation on it, there's zero science, there's zero proof that what they're doing is any good. And there's some farmers that have signed away their carbon for 30 years.
Yeah.
What happens if they sell the farm?
Well, that's the thing. Perhaps they're not allowed to, or perhaps they have to sort of like...
What if the farm goes bankrupt?
Yeah, or what?
I just don't get how that is even legally possible. Like the people that are and I'm on my high horse now, and I'm probably saying the wrong things, and I shouldn't say it. I genuinely think that it's fraudulent behaviour on the part of the people that are trading carbon at the moment.
Would you like to name particular companies?
Well, all of them.
Okay. This is, I don't know what we should say about legal stuff here.
Well, okay. It's a bit of a tongue-in-cheek comment.
Yeah.
But there is no regulation. Yeah. I've not seen and I've not studied all of the science for all of them.
Yeah.
But we know ourselves that there are so many variables involved, and just taking a soil sample this year and then a soil sample next year in the same place and having an increase in your organic matter content of your soils by, say it's by 0.5%.
Yeah.
The following year, it could be back to where it was before.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean anything.
I've got a scheme for us then. Why don't we say to the farmer, if you can increase your bricks next year,
yeah,
you know, tie it in with Nicole Masters. We've got some proper hard science then.
Oh, now you're just being cheeky.
Facetious. But it's, but that's just as valid as the horse shit that they're peddling at the moment.
But the and the reason why, you know, that there is a little bit of Nicole Masters is lacking a little bit of science, and I think she'd probably admit that herself. But I'd also caveat that with, I think that she's at the, not the cutting edge, but I think she's observing things and putting a bit of logic or a bit of reason to things that she's seeing and experiencing.
What, like the doctors did in the medieval times? Like, so if you chew on this mouse that's been slaughtered at midnight, then you'll be...
But then there was also people that said that they should chew on willow bark, or willow, which does contain an aspirin.
Again, this is an urban myth. It has to be methylated. You don't chew on willow bark and it helps. It's absolute horse shite. But there are, but saying that, there are herbs out there which are beneficial and are medicinal.
Yeah.
So okay. I'll sort of give you that. You just...
Okay. Yeah. So I used the wrong example.
Yeah, you did. But I got the sense of what you were saying.
But so, the reason why I'm okay with Nicole doing it and saying these things is because it doesn't cost the farmer anything.
Yeah, yeah, this is true. So she's got a system of monitoring success, I guess, by using the bricks.
Yeah.
And given opportunities and looking into how to explore the health of the farm.
You know, she was promoting bricks as a method of measurement.
Yeah.
She doesn't make any money from selling refractometers.
No.
Or garlic crushers.
No.
Well, not that I know of. She might have some shares. Who knows? But you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
And then she's talking about the ways in which you can improve them. She's not saying go out and buy bugs in a jug or some other wizard's piss.
Yeah.
She's saying make a good compost extract.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
You know, so I think even if she might, she's, I've got a feeling that what Nicole says is right. Yeah. Most of the time, I do.
So it's more of an intuitive sort of, yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Which I think she's right most of the time, but even if she's wrong, she's doing it for the right reasons. She's genuinely trying to help. Yes, yeah. Obviously she's making a bit of money from people that are paying to go and listen to her.
Yeah.
But she's not sort of, she's not hoodwinking anybody. She's not taking people's hard-earned money and returning them with nothing. She is adding a bit of value to farming enterprises.
Yeah, okay. So if you had a toss-up between 2 days with Gabe Brown or 2 days with Nicole Masters, where would your money go?
Oh, that's another really good question. I think I would spend the time with Nicole.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Why is that then? What's wrong with old Gabe?
There's nothing wrong. I just think Nicole has overtaken Gabe in regards to the level of her understanding and things that I'm interested in. So I, you know, I asked, one of the questions I asked Nicole was, she was talking about secondary metabolites. So yeah, from both plants, but also from microbes. Yeah. And it's something that we can't prove. We don't necessarily know definitively. But it was something I was interested in quorum sensing and quorum signaling, epigenetics, these sorts of things. They are interesting. I think there's something in it. You know, the whole nature versus nurture, that debate. it's something that interests me. It's something that she's also interested in. She likes to talk about. So I think it, for me, from my point of view, asking, when you ask me that question, that's my reasoning, is that, yeah, I think I would have a better conversation and could potentially learn more from Nicole than Gabe.
Okay, cool. Okay, so we've touched on Groundswell, said that there was a good vibe there.
Yeah.
It's a little bit hippie-ish, a bit festival-y.
But in a good way.
A good energy, yeah, really yeah, enjoyed it. There were some good conversations, but like you say, we didn't actually see too much of it. Did you see, but there was it was quite strange. And this is probably me just being an old fucker and not recognizing sort of like the modern way things are done. Yeah. But there was that young lady not wearing a great amount of clothing who was climbing over piles of poo, doing TikTok videos.
I mean, she was wearing jeans.
Yes, she was.
And then she was wearing what appeared to be a
bandana.
A bandana around the rest of her.
Yes.
Yes. But she looked about 12.
She did look about 12, which is good because it's good to have... She wasn't 12. But it's good to have the youth. But it was just quite strange. I guess that's the way young people communicate these days, and hopefully it's a positive message that she's sending. But yeah,
somebody asked me a little while ago what my opinion of agri influencers was.
Oh right, yeah.
And I think agri influencers are great, but I think the issue with agri influencers is they're only influencing agri industry.
Yeah.
So the people that are following some of these influencers are already within the agricultural industry. There aren't many from outside of agriculture that are following some of these influencers. Of course, there's a few, but I'm generalizing somewhat.
I think that anyone who is following her as an influencer probably has their laptop in the possession of the police at the moment. But
it was a bit strange.
It was a bit strange, and I imagine the type of follower she gets would be, well, yeah, let's not go there. But the thing is,
it's, you know, whether it's a good thing, a bad thing, you know, whether we agree with it or not, and we are a bit old for TikTok.
Yeah.
It was, potentially, it's people that are from outside agriculture getting an experience or seeing what agriculture is about, and that's no bad thing.
No, agreed. It just seemed very strange. I'm just used to seeing hairy-assed farmers in tractors pointing at things rather than people climbing over piles of poo wearing not a great amount of, But anyway, moving on. So you was also at Down to Earth, weren't you?
Yeah, Down to Earth South, which was controversial.
Was it?
In that...
I didn't get to that one.
No, it's a regenerative agricultural show.
That's how it actually states itself. That's its lead line.
I believe so, isn't it?
I don't know. You were there.
I believe it is. And it's run by the Royal Association of British Dairy Farmers. Okay. So there's a strong dairy focus. And this year, it happened to be... So there's two this year. There's a South... And there's a North, and the South show was hosted by a very large intensive dairy farmer.
What, they were large or the farm was large?
The farm was large.
Okay. Yeah, I just wanted to clarify that for our thicker listeners.
They had lots of cows.
Good. Yes. So, that's the sort of language I like.
Again, a bit like Groundswell, I didn't get to explore much of the show.
Oh, you were talking there as well, weren't you?
I was.
Did you feel qualified to talk at that one?
I felt qualified to talk at both shows. Thank you very much.
No, you didn't earlier.
Well, no, okay. I felt qualified to talk. I just feel that nobody wants to listen to me, and I'd much rather listen to somebody else.
Bravo.
And it's probably the same for everybody that was listening as well.
They're still with us at this point.
Yeah. and I didn't get to see much at Down to Earth. It's a lot smaller.
Yeah.
But it's a little bit more hands-on in that you can go and have a walk around the farm, see the cows, see the fields. You know, it's more of a glorified farm walk.
Okay. So you didn't have your sort of Guardian reading, alpaca farmer, you know, wearing hemp and his clogs?
There was no clogs. There was no hemp. I would say there was a lot of farmers.
Excellent. Okay. So do you think then that has more validity than Groundswell?
Oh, no, I don't know that it does.
No?
Well, it was on a large dairy farm. You know, you got over 1,000 cows, dairy cows. How can you be regenerative when you're milking that many cows? That was the controversy around the show being hosted by what can only be termed as an intensive dairy farm.
So was it greenwashing then? Do you think it's a propaganda thing? It's sort of like a public image.
No, so I spoke to one of the organisers of the show, and they said, well, they've done it intentionally to demonstrate that anybody can be regenerative.
Okay.
Which is something I actually agree with.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't matter whether you could have been an organic, no-till farmer, mixed farmer for the last 20 years, and you could class yourself as being regenerative. You would be further along that regenerative journey than the intensive dairy farmer. But that intensive dairy farmer, if they take steps to be more regenerative, they're also deemed as a regenerative farmer.
Yeah. So does this come back to my sort of like scale of from catastrophic through to sustainable?
Yes. So even if, and I'm not saying that this dairy farmer was catastrophic by any stretch of the imagination, but even if there was a dairy farmer or arable farmer that was what you deem as catastrophic.
Yeah.
And then they started multi-cropping or bi-cropping or putting in cover crops or reducing their fertilizer usage.
Yeah.
All of those things could be classed as him trying to be more regenerative.
Yeah. And is that more important that someone in that stage does it than your organic farmer who's already, you know, sort of like most of the way there?
Well, this comes back to the whole carbon point. That particular farmer can benefit financially a lot more from becoming more regenerative.
Yeah.
So actually, you could argue that the intensive dairy farmer getting rid of his monoculture of Italian ryegrass and replacing it with multi-species swards, for example, could have a better or a more positive effect on what we will class as the sort of regenerative principles and therefore ultimately sequestering carbon than a mixed livestock farmer that farms extensively that has decided to go from permanent pasture to herbal lays.
So is there then a diminishing return for regenerative agriculture?
Well, we're going to get to the point, you know, the very nature of the term regenerative means that we are regenerating something or making something better than what it was before.
Yeah.
Or returning it to. And this was something that sort of I asked Nicole about as well, was, and she did touch on it, and then she emphasized it a bit more the second day. In New Zealand, in Australia, in North America, which, let's be honest, they're the big sort of growing farming areas that we sort of compare ourselves to.
Yeah.
They have an issue with a lack of organic matter in the soil, a lack of biology in the soil, and a lack of rainfall.
Yeah.
Well, in the UK, we generally have reasonable organic matters. We have pretty good biological activity in our soils, and we generally have enough rain to grow the crops that we need.
Yeah. So are we quite smug then when it comes to regen?
No, because I don't know, you know, we haven't done the, we haven't had the Dust Bowl experience like the US has had.
Yeah.
We haven't had that. We're in the fortunate position where the soils that we've had were possibly better to start with, and they've taken a little bit more of that harsh treatment potentially. And we've always had a bit more, you know, you think about the US and then the millions or billions of bison that they killed. You know, they removed livestock from their environment a long time ago, and they replaced them with predominantly corn growing areas, corn, soya and cotton. And then huge, great, you know, feedlots. Okay. Whereas in the UK, we still have smaller fields, mixed farming and a lot of livestock. We've also got slightly heavier soils, which means that we've got better organic matters, we've got better biological activity, and we've got better rainfall. We haven't got so far to regenerate, if you will, but then who knows what we're regenerating to? There is no end goal.
So perhaps we could actually do offsetting for countries that have got more regenerating to do. We could sell our regeneration to them.
Well, I mean, you could, absolutely.
Sorry,
but I don't think it'll ever happen.
No, I know. I was just playing with you saying so other big countries can just go and fuck the soil up and we'll just make ours better.
No, but the point is they can make their soils better more than what we can.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So why is the regen ag thing so strong in this country when it doesn't need to be?
Well, I'm wondering whether the real emphasis of what really kick-started regen, and we always talk about marketing.
Yeah.
But I wonder whether it was a response by agriculture in the UK to being blamed for climate change.
Okay, that's an interesting approach. Yeah.
So we both know that there's a few commentators that point the finger very much at livestock farming and modern agricultural practices for causing a lot of the problems, Monbiot being one of them. And I think actually the sort of response from agriculture usually isn't, agriculture usually just gets on with things, but I think it realized that this was a serious conversation and wasn't going to be going away.
Yeah.
And actually they've come back and said, look, no, actually agriculture does have the ability to sequester carbon. Yeah. No other industry has that capability.
Yeah, indeed.
So we've been promoting that. We've been promoting agriculture's ability to sequester carbon, to address climate change, and actually to reduce the CO2 in the atmosphere, and actually make up for all of the people that have been flying back and forth to different countries and all of the fossil fuels that we've used.
Yeah. It's normally actually the people that do that are the eco-protesters, aren't they?
People,
the climates in really nice exotic places to talk about how us plebs are ruining the world. But I don't want to get into the politics of it. I think
if we really wanted to do something, I suggest that the next COP, wherever it's going to be held, should probably be held online, because the amount of carbon that they would save by not having all these people fly into one place would probably, you know, offset several gigatons of carbon, I would imagine.
I would actually suggest that the next COP is actually held in one of those submersibles that goes down to the Titanic. But that's just my personal opinion of the sort of people that are making policy for us poor people to follow. I don't want to get into the politics of it all. No. So anyway, we're coming up. We've been talking for ages. Yep. Shows, regenerative agriculture shows, festivals, meetings, collaborations, that sort of thing. Are they worth it? Are they just echo chambers?
We had a conversation with a guy late on the second day,
Graham,
who's a big potato grower.
Yeah.
You know, potatoes.
He grows big potatoes.
He doesn't grow big potatoes. He's responsible for lots of potatoes being grown.
Okay.
And it was the first time for him at Groundswell. He only came to one day. He loved it. He wished he'd been there 2 days. And that's coming from somebody, you know, potatoes are probably considered the least regenerative crop that you could possibly grow.
Yeah.
And they were really focusing on what could be done. He was engaging, he was interested, you know, he was excited, motivated, inspired, all of those words.
Yeah.
By what he had seen in one day at Groundswell.
Okay, so it wasn't so much an echo chamber for him as an inspiration.
And I think I've been quite harsh on this echo chamber that exists within Regen Ag.
Yeah.
But actually, I didn't get that sense this time.
Is that because it was so much bigger this time? There were a lot of people who'd never been before, exactly like your big chap.
wasn't big.
Oh, his potatoes were big. Sorry, I get you. But do you think the word is spreading and the echo chamber is actually, it's actually, you know, the word is, you know, spreading outside of that?
I think there was a lot of people that have realized that it's not going away.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of people there that have thought, do you know what? Everybody raves about Groundswell. Come on, let's see what the fuss is about.
Yeah.
I also think there was a lot of people that possibly weren't, that aren't usually, that would usually be there, that probably thought, well, I went there last year. I can probably miss it this year and we'll go again next year. You know, it's, you can go to a show every single year and you get to know where everything is. It becomes a little bit samey, a bit repetitive. And that's always the death of a show, isn't it?
Yeah. Cereals. Sorry. And yeah, absolutely.
So I think it was good. I just felt like a lot of people probably are starting to this could go back to Nicole Masters, to be honest with you, and even Joel Williams, another one that I actually just said hello to and will catch up with again in the future. They're not promoting products. And I think the people that are now really invested in regenerative agriculture realize that probably one of the key principles of regenerative agriculture is that you can really significantly reduce your inputs.
Yeah.
So
more efficiently, anyway.
Reducing the use of inputs. You know, if you can add a few bits to your glyphosate, you can increase its effectiveness and reduce the amount you need to use. Or the same goes for foliar fertilizers, for example.
Yeah.
So people are realizing that. And therefore, they're not as seduced by people selling inputs.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think that's definitely coming to the fore, which is a shame. Well, I don't want to get into politics of big ag, but yeah, they've got to sell something. So they're just looking for different inputs. Whereas I think people, farmers, are looking for lack of inputs. They don't want to spend the money on them. But anyway, we're sort of coming to the end of almost an hour. Of the festivals that you went to, or festivals or the shows, whatever, which was the best?
I really enjoyed Groundswell. Groundswell is going to be my favourite show this year.
Okay, so which was the worst? We didn't mention the Green Farm Collective one because, well,
yeah, that was pretty bad.
Awkward.
That was pretty bad.
A lot of people did enjoy it, but I felt there was no buzz there at all. It was, it didn't do it for me. But, you know, horses for courses. So what do you think is the biggest buzzword that was going around? So was there a particular topic this year from the talks?
Well, I asked a few people that because obviously I would socialize in the evening because, well, I wanted to, which is probably why my voice is sounding terrible today.
Yes.
And I asked that question to a few people that I know and like, and one of them said his instant response was composting.
Oh, okay.
He'd been to 4 or 5 different talks, and each one of them, or each talk that he'd been to, at some point somebody had mentioned composting at one time or another.
Okay.
Maybe so, in different respects, you know, somebody could have been talking about compost extracts or vermicast, yeah. But, you know, the composting in the generalist sense was mentioned several times, which for anybody that knows me, that was quite new music to my ears, if you will. But that was genuinely feedback that I had from somebody else.
Okay. So, yeah. Okay. So that's a buzzword. I think perhaps we should explore that in the next podcast, as we have our very own expert on that. So,
well, I would actually like to do.
Okay.
And I'm not saying no, because obviously I like talking about compost, but what I would like to do is speak to and interview a few people that were at the shows.
Oh, good idea. Yeah.
And get their opinion, because I'm fed up with listening to my opinion.
Yes, so am I.
And I think that listening to other people and their opinions gives a far better understanding to the listeners of what these things are about, because they would have seen things that I didn't. They would have experienced things that we didn't, and they would have a different opinion.
Okay, right. Well, let's open it up then. Get in touch with us. Go to Twitter at agbullsh, AGBULLSH. Contact on Instagram, which is, I don't know what it is, Instagram.
It's ag bullshit with the I being a one.
Right. Okay. So, yeah, get in touch with us. Let us know what you thought if you were there. Go on Twitter, start up a conversation, get involved. Meanwhile, we'll look for some other people that are willing to get in touch and get involved. And we'll do that for the next podcast then.
Or feel free to come and talk to us at Down to Earth North, cool, which is on Thursday next week.
So where are you going to be? Or don't you want to get the company names involved?
Well, no, I don't want to know. I shall be kicking around. I'm actually talking.
Oh, okay. So you're go to every talk by someone called Andrew. If he puts you to sleep, you've found the right one.
Yeah, exactly that.
Go and have a chat. Tell him what a twat he is.
We set up this podcast to be challenged and to challenge others.
Yeah.
And even when we had Ed in, we ended up agreeing far too much.
Yeah.
Although he did send me a text message afterwards, and I'm sure he won't mind me saying this, calling me something not very nice after I criticised his employer for greenwashing the shit out of Groundswell.
Oh dear.
So I don't think he was he took too kindly to that. But I have made up for it, Ed, and I am kind of apologising by saying that although there was big ag at Groundswell was actually really good this year.
Cool. Yeah, I think you pulled yourself out of that one. And
is that okay? Am I safe? Will he talk to me when I see him next?
Yeah. And in the grand scheme of things, of all the insults we've made, that's probably the least inflammatory.
Yeah.
Right, okay, let's knock it on the head. It's Friday afternoon.
England are playing cricket. I want to go and watch the cricket.
Whatever. That sounds intensely dull, but yeah, enjoy yourself.
You go and play with your horse.
I will go and play with my horse. I love my horse.
Right, it's good stuff.
Yeah, ta-ra.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.